spokesman for Iran's armed forces warns Israel and its Western supporters they'll pay a heavy price if they cross Iran's red lines. Iran's foreign minister tells the UN chief Tehran's punishing response to Israel falls within the framework of legitimate defense and is based on international law. And Israel's latest strikes on Gaza killed nearly 70 civilians in 24 hours as the death toll for regime genocide approaches 33,800. A senior spokesman for Iran's armed forces warned Israel and its Western supporters they'll pay a high price if they cross Iran's red lines. Brigadier General Abu Fazl Shekarchi warned leaders of the U.S., the U.K., France, and Germany to stop supporting the rogue, law-breaking, child-killing terrorist Israeli regime. He said if those Western countries and Israel cross the line, then Iran's response will be much more powerful than the earlier punishment they carried out against the Israelis. Shekarchi reiterated the Islamic Republic is not a warmonger, is not seeking to spread war, but advised Western backers of Israel to come to their senses and cease support for the illegitimate and terrorist Israeli regime instead of condemning Iran's legitimate and legal response to its criminal actions. The Iranian foreign minister says Tehran's punishing response to Israel's attack on its embassy in Syria was carried out within the framework of legitimate defense and based on international law. Hossein Amri Abdullahian made the comments in a phone call with the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He said the Islamic Republic only targeted a number of Israeli military positions which had been used by the regime to carry out its attack on Iran's consular building in Damascus. He emphasized Iran's response to the regime could have been stronger. The top diplomat added only option left for Tehran was to take military action after the UN Security Council failed to condemn Israel's attack on Iran's diplomatic premises. The Iranian foreign minister had earlier made similar remarks in phone calls with the Chinese, British, German, Russian, Austrian, Indonesian, Malaysian, and Slovenian counterparts. Iran's retaliatory military operation against Israel and the inability of the regime's air defenses to intercept a significant number of Iranian missiles and drones have prompted Tel Aviv's allies to try and condemn Iran's legitimate response. We discussed this issue with our guests earlier in our news review program.
Well, welcome to the news review. I want to welcome Gisu Mishal Ahmedi to this part of the program. Gisu, very good to have you. Let's look at what is being said. It's really interesting because Iran continues to cite its legitimate right, according to international law, for the retaliatory attacks that he initiated on Saturday night. However, we look at some of the reactions from some of the hegemonic front countries, whether we're talking about the UK or US or France, and we see that actually they have condemned Iran for those attacks. Your assessment, I mean, you have talked to the foreign minister, and just particularly in dealing with Iran's right to have initiated those retaliatory attacks.
Well, Marzia, first of all, let's go back to the United Nations Security Council session that was held at the request of Israelis, of course. Even in that session, we saw that other than a few of Israel's allies, who are obviously going to side with Israel at whatever cost, other countries did condemn that attack. And that is, according to the Vienna Conventions, Marzia, this is nothing specific to Iran or any particular country. All the signatories of the Vienna Convention and all the countries in the world enjoy this right that their diplomatic missions are immune. They should remain immune even at times of war. They've been trying to side with Israel. Even David Cameron on Sky News, I was watching that. It was quite interesting to see that the presenter asked him, what would the UK do if its diplomatic mission was attacked and razed to the ground? And he said, definitely the UK would give an immediate and very strong response to that.
Thanks so much for being with me, Ali Salam, Editor-in-Chief of Basira Press. Your thoughts on the overall situation, because one thing that we have seen, too, that ever since the Iran's retaliatory attack, we have also seen those who are trying to lessen the impact or the effectiveness of what Iran has done, basically by downplaying what Iran had done, the retaliatory strike. Your thoughts on that?
So this retaliatory attack has really shamed all of the disinformation peddlers and those who wish to downplay Iran's role in the region. And this has had so many levels. On the military level, that they were able to surpass four countries' air defense systems, the United States, England, Jordan, and then finally the Zionist regime, and then be able to land several ballistic missiles into the actual military sites that were used for this heinous attack on Iranian soil. And then there was the PR aspect, especially with, for example, people realizing who is really on the side of Palestine. Just on so many levels, this is aside from even the military aspect, it's just really exposed the truth. It's shown who is on which side, and I think that a lot of people don't like that, and they don't like to admit that they were wrong. So they're obviously going to cry crocodile tears, and they're going to try to do mental gymnastics. But the truth is plain for all who have eyes to see, and who are not blinded by sectarianism or any other kind of propaganda. Iran is the rational actor in the region. Iran is the moral actor in the region. Iran doesn't like to see people's blood being shed. In fact, this force is being used in order to stop the blood from being shed. And so that they know that this is only a fraction of Iran's capabilities. The lesser technologies were used, such as the drones, missiles. They have much more powerful ones, much more accurate ones, much faster ones. And so they know that this is only the preview of what's to come. So Iran used most of its inexpensive and lesser type munitions, while Israel had spent over $1 billion just in one night on the various missiles that it shot to shoot down the swarm of drones, most of which were decoys in order to protect the higher power ballistic missiles that made their targets. So I think they're absolutely, absolutely humiliated, because I don't think they can deal with another round. How many billions of dollars do they really have to be able to spend in basically less than a few hours? So this is something that has definitely shown Iran's military dominance. And this is the language that the genocidal terrorists understand. They're not going to be swayed by the NGOs. They're not going to be swayed by any of these others that seek to delegitimize resistance. This is the way to bring an end to this genocide, is when they fear losing billions of dollars in a matter of hours and high-precision missiles hitting their sensitive targets.
And on that note, I thank both of you being with me on this news review. Gisu Misha Ahmedi, Ali Salam, Editor-in-Chief, Basira Press.
All hypersonic missiles fired by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guard Corps hit their designated targets in Israel, marking the first time that Iran's deployed such weapons against real targets. Sources have informed Press TV the Israeli regime and its supporters failed to intercept any of the hypersonic missiles fired. These missiles are fired alongside drones, other ballistic and cruise missiles during the retaliatory operation against the Israeli regime. Iran's one of few countries that possess technology to produce the hypersonic missiles. These missiles can travel at stunning speeds and hit targets with great precision. Iran's hypersonic missiles are highly maneuverable, enabling them to have an unpredictable flight path in order to confuse enemy shields. The IRGC says that tracking Iran's hypersonic missiles is impossible. Iran's Operation True Promise is in retaliation for the Israeli regime's terrorist attack against Iran's embassy in Damascus, Syria. It's the first time Iran used a variety of military assets, namely drones and missiles, in conjunction with radar hacking technology to hit its intended targets with pinpoint accuracy. Here's a look at Iran's military prowess and why its operation was successful.
Iran's Operation True Promise was a significant counterattack that proved successful in a host of arenas, especially the military one. Now, this is while Israel is not only downplaying the efficiency of this operation, but it is falsely reporting that most of the incoming missiles and drones were intercepted. But that is not exactly the case. The multiple drone and missile attacks were preceded by a series of cyber attacks on the Zionist regime's power grid and radar systems. Now, the Zionist regime's radars were under a hack attack, which forced the closure of the airspace over occupied territories. Now, the hack also interrupted the coalition between the Israeli air defense systems and their American counterparts. Well, four rounds of drone and missile attacks were executed at 11 p.m. local time by the IRGC. Now, the first wave included dozens of Shahed 136 kamikaze drones, about 100 units of Delta wing-shaped, low-observable and low-signature loitering munitions with a range of 2,000 kilometers and a speed of about 200 kilometers per hour. Now, that carried a warhead of 50 kilograms. Well, after the first wave, three more wave attacks that followed at intervals of about half an hour, and it is estimated that a total of 318 drones and missiles were launched. Keep in mind that this operation is the largest drone attack in Iran's history. Well, the numbers certainly prove that. Now, next came the launch of a series of cruise and ballistic missiles, accompanied by simultaneous drone and missile strikes by the Axis of Resistance groups from Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Well, the types of missiles are speculated to be Kheba Shikan ballistic missile with a range of over 1,400 kilometers and a half a ton warhead. And the unthinkable became a reality when Iran unveiled the production of hypersonic missiles at the end of 2023, a more advanced version of the Fatah hypersonic missile. No one, well, would have guessed that they would be using it in a counterattack operation just 5 months later. And all hypersonic missiles did hit their designated targets, marking the first time Iran employed such weapons against real targets. It was reported that at least seven were used in this operation, which hit the Nevatim Air Base located in the Negev Desert. It hosts the F-35 planes used in the terrorist attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Well, another base in the Negev Desert was also hit. The Ramon Air Base was target of multiple missiles, leaving a trail of destruction. 12 countries participated in the operation to protect Israel. There were 10 actually, including more than 170 fighter jets. Just 250 defense missiles were launched from our ships, but more than 60% of the missiles hit the targets. Who are the Iranian engineers? Again, pointing to Iran's military might. Well, Iran's military posture has now changed when it comes to the Israeli regime. Major General Hossein Salami, the commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps, IRGC, has said, from now on, if the Zionist regime targets any of our personnel, properties, and civilians, we will not hesitate to retaliate from our own lands.
Welcome back, everyone. Israel's unrelenting airstrikes and artillery fire continue to claim more civilian lives across the Gaza Strip, pushing the blockaded territory further to the brink. Deadly airstrike targeted a home in Rafah in southern Gaza, killing at least four Palestinians, including a child. In northern Gaza, Israeli attacks struck the Al-Fakhura Martyrs Mosque and the Jabalia refugee camp, leaving several Palestinians dead and at least nine injured. In the north, a number of occupation vehicles entered the town of Beit Hanun and surrounded a school that housed displaced people before opening fire. Now, a number of Palestinians were killed and several wounded in an Israeli strike on the Nusayra refugee camp in central Gaza. A Gaza health official said nearly 70 people were killed and 94 injured in the past 24 hours. Death toll from regime's genocide in Gaza now stands at nearly 33,800, with over 76,460 others injured. The World Health Organization Director for Eastern Mediterranean Regional Office is currently in Tehran. She says the organization has been pushing forward with evacuation of patients from Gaza. However, according to Hanan Balkhi, the process is disappointingly slow and challenging.
The massacre of and the death of the men and the women and the people of Gaza. The country office, as we said, we have 22 member states, and the occupied Palestinian territory is one of the member states part of the Eastern Mediterranean region, where we also have our own presence within Gaza and the West Bank. And the WHO staff, with the support of the regional office and the HQ, so the whole of WHO, has been in full support of the activities, the missions, the visits, the evacuations of some of the patients, not to the level of our desire, but we have been pushing very hard by advocating for further access, further support. We also have major work in coordinating with the relevant entities on the evacuation and identifying hospitals and countries that can accommodate patients and treat them. As I mentioned that, we had also my own visit to the Rafah border and my visit to Al Arish hospital that is hosting and receiving the injured from Gaza, where we are discussing all the time on how to improve the healthcare provision, but also with the UN Secretary General, who recently also visited. We're discussing on advocating for the end of these atrocities in the occupied Palestinian territory.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you. Early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
The cowardly killing of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh's 3 sons and 4 grandchildren in Gaza only exemplifies the fact that the murderous occupying entity called Israel is on a deathbed. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, the latest diabolic crime committed by the apartheid regime first and foremost shows its desperation and hopelessness and its inability to achieve any of the stated military goals. It quiet, ambitiously outlined before embarking on the latest genocidal campaign. The Zionist regime was under the illusion that by assassinating the resistance leader's family members, the Zionist entity might get some form of leverage at the negotiating table. If anything, Benjamin Netanyahu has made it harder for himself and his U.S. masters. The leaders of many resistance groups in Palestine have offered their sons and family members as martyrs to the cause of liberating their land from the Israeli occupation. After receiving the news about the killing of his children and grandchildren recently, Hania appeared calm and composed, thanking God for the honor of bestowing martyrdom on his close family members. That's the trait of great leaders. Hania said almost every family in Gaza has paid a heavy price with the blood of their children in the past 6 months and before that, and he is only one of them. Importantly, leaders of the Axis of Resistance in other parts of the regions have also offered exemplary sacrifices for the greater cause, the bigger cause, against the aggressors. This shared legacy of sacrifice and martyrdom has only strengthened the steadfastness of the Axis of Resistance and its leaders, from Palestine to Lebanon to Iraq to Yemen. Among the most notable examples is the son of Lebanese Hezbollah Resistance Movement Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. 18-year-old Hadi Nasrallah was martyred by the Zionist regime forces in 1997 in southern Lebanon. The important aspect here is the reaction and position of these resistance leaders when their sons or family members are martyred by the Zionist regime occupation. Do they regret and repent? Do they grieve and complain? Does it become personal? And does that personal aspect make them succumb to pressure or give up on the cause? Unfortunately, for the apartheid Israeli regime and its delusional despots in Tel Aviv and Washington, the blood of all the resistance factions, their leaders and their sons and family members, is the driving force that will eventually end the illegal and brutal occupation. One day after the martyrdom of Hadi Nasrallah, Hezbollah Secretary General delivered a thumping speech in which he explained how painful it was for him before to visit the parents of the Lebanese resistance movement's martyrs and look them in the eye. Hadi Nasrallah wasn't the only one martyred by the Israeli occupation forces. Many more offered exemplary sacrifices. Hadi's body, like those of others, was held by the Zionist entity. The Hezbollah chief said in September 1997, "I tell the families of the martyrs whose bodies remain captive that we also share this common feature now." At the funeral service the same month, he declared, "The martyrdom of Hadi is a message that the leadership of Hezbollah doesn't leave aside its sons to enjoy the post-occupation future. When our sons head to the front line, that is our pride, and when they are martyred, this allows us to hold our heads up high." Over the next 3 years, Hezbollah inflicted heavy battlefield casualties on the Israeli occupation, forcing it to withdraw from the Lebanese territory in 2000 in humiliation. The Arab country regained its sovereignty, independence, security, and honor as a result of all the blood given by resistance fighters, founders, leaders, and their family members. History is repeating itself. Now the resistance has grown in faith, determination, as well as in military terms, while the Israeli regime is reaching its dead end. There is nothing the rogue, child-murdering Netanyahu regime can boast after half a year of U.S.-backed genocide in Gaza. The resistance has prevailed and the occupation has lost. The video that went viral showed the moment Hania, visiting wounded Palestinians at a hospital in Qatar, was informed via a crying voice on the phone from Gaza about the killing of his three sons, three granddaughters, and one grandson. Without a scintilla of pain visible on Hamas leader's face is because this resistance, unlike the U.S. and its proxy, has a clear vision for Gaza and Palestine. He nods his head, saying, "God will rest their souls." An aide asks, "Shall we end the visit?" He responds, "No, let's continue." The strategy of resistance is inked in the blood of its martyrs, which sends a clear message to the United States that it prefers martyrdom and dignity over a life of humiliation. Haniyeh said, "The enemy believes that targeting the families of the leaders will push them to give up the demands of our people." Putting up a tough front, the Hamas leader hastened to add, "Anyone who believes that targeting my sons will push Hamas to change its position is delusional." This has been the position of all resistance groups and their leaders in West Asia for more than four decades now. The principles of the cause overshadow personal considerations. The people of Gaza are indeed the most oppressed people on the planet right now. Yet the disinformation campaign by mainstream Western and some regional media that the Hamas leadership is enjoying a life of luxury in exile is aimed at discrediting the resistance. Has the same media forgotten so quickly that Haniyeh is among the millions of Palestinians who have been arrested and served time in Israeli jails, tortured and abused? Was he not on the ground in Gaza when it was blown to pieces many times before and the founders of Hamas, along with many of its senior leaders, were assassinated by the murderous Zionist regime? Was it not Haniyeh who emerged from a building in Gaza that had been razed to the ground by an Apache helicopter 20 years ago, holding the lifeless body of a toddler and carrying it in his arms to an ambulance? Haven't his three sons and four grandchildren, in addition to some 70 others, close relatives, been killed in Gaza since October 7th? Many Western leaders know the answers to these questions, but exposing them would expose U.S.-backed Zionist war crimes in the territory. Hamas leaders now living in exile spend the majority of their life on the ground in Gaza and witnessed firsthand the movement's spiritual leader Sheikh Ahmad Yassin's assassination in 2004 and that of the group's co-founder Abdul Aziz Al-Rantisi after Yassin. Many want the world to believe that the genocidal war on Gaza and the wider ethnic cleansing of Palestinians started when the cloaks of Western mainstream media and their military-industrial complex-affiliated analysts decided to start it on October 7th. All the leaders of Palestinian resistance movements have sacrificed their family members over the past decades to free their country from its Nazi-like colonial rulers. In the case of Hamas, which is leading the negotiations on behalf of all the Palestinian resistance factions and people in Gaza, the group hasn't been deterred by U.S.-made bombs to relinquish its demands for a permanent ceasefire, the withdrawal of all occupation forces from the entire strip, and a return of all the displaced Palestinians to their homes. All the signs indicate that no level of ignorance on behalf of the United States and its illegitimate proxy regime in West Asia will make the group climb down from its negotiating position. The prayer of the dead has been read over the bodies of Haniyeh's sons in Gaza, just like they were read for more than 33,300 others in harsh conditions. The path to liberating occupied Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque is a marathon, not a sprint. But the finish line is within reach and will be crossed by the resistance, their leaders, and their family members.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, keeping your spirituality healthy. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are here on A to Z talking about how to keep our spirituality healthy. Now, of course, you know, we always think about keeping our body healthy, and that is something that is really important because our body is, you know, of course, this vehicle or this means via which we go about our daily routine and we go about doing our daily tasks. But along with mere physical healthiness and this healthy lifestyle, of course, you have this spiritual aspect of a human being. And this spiritual aspect is just as important, if not perhaps more important than that physical aspect. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, we don't take care of our health in the physical term, but what it does mean is that, you know, if for some reason, God forbid, we're not very healthy, you know, our body mass index is not exactly perfect, that isn't as bad as if our spiritual state of health is really bad and we are unhealthy when it comes to our spiritual life. And so just as we have a healthy lifestyle, we have a Islamic lifestyle. And that's, you know, what we talk about on A to Z when it comes to Islamic lifestyle. Now, when it comes to spirituality and having a healthy spirituality, of course, this does have an effect on a person's physical body as well. You know, when you feel good, when you feel happy, when you feel spiritually satisfied, this is the manner in which the physical health also improves, and of course the spiritual health will also improve if we work at it. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how to keep ourselves spiritually healthy. We talked a little bit about how, you know, our body, yes, it does need us to take care of it. But when it comes to our spirit and our soul, which is that which is everlasting, that also requires a lot of attention and it requires work. And, you know, we need to work on our spiritual health. Now, when it comes to our spiritual health, of course, having a good communication and a good, healthy relationship with God, Almighty Allah, is something that is incredibly important. And that's something that we need to work at. This can be done, of course, in a various different ways, whether it is the five daily prayers, which help us to connect to Allah, you know, on a daily basis, five times a day, you know, because we're focusing on God when we are praying and we are doing our wajib obligatory prayers. And really, it's kind of like five times a day we are encouraged, you know, we are requested to come to the court and the presence of the Almighty God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, you know, and spend some time speaking with Him. Now, this speaking with Allah, if we understand what's going on, is what creates a relationship with God. That relationship with Allah is what keeps us spiritually healthy. Of course, the recitation of the Holy Quran with its meaning, this is also very important when it comes to having a healthy soul and a healthy spiritual life or a Islamic lifestyle. So just, you know, very few and short points on how to have a healthy spiritual life in our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
With you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Liberal democracies remain shamefully complicit with the Zionist regime, despite its ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, students of world politics have long understood that when it comes to the strategic interest of leading states, international law is marginalized unless it is useful in waging a propaganda war against adversaries. Indeed, the United Nations was designed in ways that recognize this feature of international political life. Otherwise, giving the winners of the Second World War a right of veto would make no sense. Such an exemption from international law was also evident at the war crimes trials held in Nuremberg and Tokyo after the Second World War, at which only the crimes of the looters were scrutinized for legal accountability and obvious crimes of the victors, such as the indiscriminate bombing of Dresden and the atomic bomb attacks on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were not prosecuted. To this day, for understandable reasons, many in Japan believe the use of weapons of mass destruction against the civilian population of these two cities constituted genocide. Of all the red lines, none was more widely acknowledged than genocide, despite it being often difficult to establish legally in the midst of ethnic conflicts or wartime combat. Genocide is clearly proscribed in international law and by diplomatic pressures, which have mounted as the Zionist regime onslaught has persisted, public outrage has intensified, and the complicity of the West has continued unabated. The pre-Gaza normative authority of the label of genocide was so great that former U.S. President Bill Clinton in 1994 prohibited the use of the word in official discourse, fearing that terming the slaughter in Rwanda a genocide would create irresistible pressures on the U.S. to act to stop the mass killing. Serbia's mid-1990s policies of ethnic cleansing in the Bosnian War were challenged in the International Court of Justice as genocide, but the problems of establishing intent proved too great. Most recently, Myanmar's repression of Rohingya Muslims was widely considered to be genocide, leading to a challenge by Gambia at the ICJ, with the case still pending. For years, the Zionist regime successfully invoked the Holocaust to obscure Israel's own atrocity-laden process of coercive tactics, seeking the maximum dispossession and expulsion of the indigenous majority of Palestinians in the process of establishing the fake regime of Israel in 1948 and occupying East al-Quds, the West Bank, and Gaza since 1967 war. It deflected the hostile global chorus opposing its occupation policies as expressions of anti-Semitism, and even now meets criticism of its practices with the specious argument that it could not be guilty of genocide as it was itself the victim of the largest genocide of all time, a contention recalling W.H. Auden's famous line in a poem, "Those to whom evil is done to do evil in return." How, then, can we understand this willingness of former Western colonial powers to keep providing various levels of support to the child killer regime of Israel while it carries out, in real time, the most transparent genocide in all of human history? This killing process has shockingly been justified by dehumanizing language employed by the Zionist regime top leaders, including Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and War Minister Yoav Gallant. For 6 months, the indiscriminate and disproportionate violence has devastated the 2.3 million Palestinian civilians living in Gaza, destroying their already impoverished habitat. Genocide serves as a coercive instrument to induce mass forced expulsion, enacting the settler ethos of leave or die. The Netanyahu coalition government that took office in January 2023 was regarded, even in the West, as the most extremist leadership in all of the Zionist regime's history. What made it extreme, aside from cabinet positions for leaders of Jewish Power Party, Itamar Ben-Gvir, and religious Zionism, Bezalel Smotrich, was the immediate green lighting of settler violence in the occupied West Bank. The erasure of any Palestinian political entity on a map of the new Middle East unfurled by Netanyahu at the UN. And above all, a thinly disguised resolve to complete the Zionist project by incorporating the West Bank and possibly Gaza into Greater Israel. Several months after this government took office came the October 7th Al-Aqsa Storm operation. The Zionist regime onslaught followed, culminating in authoritative international pronouncements suggesting that the Zionist regime was guilty of genocide. The ICJ in January ruled that it was plausible the child-killing regime of Israel had committed acts of genocide in Gaza, with the court voting 15-2 to order the regime to take all possible measures to stop such acts. More conclusively, in March, a meticulous report from the UN Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories found reasonable grounds to believe that the threshold indicating the Zionist regime's commission of genocide is met. Although Israeli regime's leaders from the outset made no effort to hide their genocidal intentions, and the imagery of nightly TV and social media made this genocide palpable to the eyes and ears of the world, it strangely did not move the world's liberal democracies to adjust their policies. Above all, the US regime held fast. It vetoed a series of ceasefire resolutions at the UN Security Council, called the ICJ genocide case meritless, and dismissed the analytically impressive genocide report of the distinguished UN Special Rapporteur, Francisca Albanese, as the work of an anti-Semite. It vetoed a series of ceasefire resolutions at the UN Security Council, called the ICJ genocide case meritless, and dismissed the analytically impressive genocide report of the distinguished UN Special Rapporteur, Francisca Albanese, as the work of an anti-Semite, all while pushing for congressional approval of increased military aid, bombs, and munitions to Israel, alongside continued unflagging diplomatic support in international venues. The US regime finally toned down this unconditional posture only after it became clear that it was hurting President Joe Biden's 2024 re-election prospects. And after the furious backlash that followed the attack this month on a rural central kitchen convoy, which killed 7 aid workers, 6 of whom were Westerners, tasked with bringing food to starving Palestinians. This caused a media uproar in the West so great that it prompted Netanyahu to make a rare apology. This tragic incident also validated the suspicion that the killing of innocent Europeans has much greater political resonance in the West than the killing of thousands of innocent Palestinians, including hospitalized patients and staff. How do we explain this shameful complicity with the Zionist regime and this total rejection of international law in the face of such a transparent and cruel genocide? If the US regime is prepared to exonerate Israel from genocide, the crime of crimes, in this blatant manner, it sends a message to the world that even under the most horrifying circumstances, geopolitical affinities take precedence over law and morality, even for liberal democracies. There are other factors that have contributed to this dark turn in global policy, including the dehumanization of the Palestinian people for decades by assuming the whole population of Gaza is tainted by Hamas. The Orientalist view that Palestinians and all Arab Muslims are somehow subhuman, crude pressures brought in the US by the Israeli lobby, and a lingering guilty conscience in Europe, especially Germany.
The roots of the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories can be traced back to the late 19th and early 20th centuries, with the rise of the Zionist movements advocating for the establishment of a so-called Jewish homeland in historical Palestine. The Balfour Declaration of 1917, issued by the British government, lent support to these aspirations, laying the groundwork for the eventual creation of Israel in 1948. The events surrounding the creation of Israel in 1948, known as the Nakba, or the Catastrophe, marked a pivotal moment in the history of the region. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were displaced from their homes and became refugees as a result of the conflict between Israeli and Arab forces. In 1967, Israel launched a strike against Egypt, Jordan, and Syria in what became known as the Six-Day War. Supported by its Western allies, including the United States and Britain, the Israeli regime occupied the West Bank, including East El-Quds, the Gaza Strip, the Sinai Peninsula, and the Golan Heights. This marked the beginning of Israel's military occupation of Palestinian territories, which continues to this day. Palestinians tried all diplomatic and legal ways to end the Israeli occupation over the past 7 decades. In the early 1990s, efforts were made to negotiate a peaceful resolution to allow Palestinians to have their own state. Known as the Oslo Accord, it never put an end to the Israeli aggression, as the regime continued settlement expansion in the occupied territories. There were other deals, including Camp David, which never resulted in peace and only emboldened Israel in its atrocities against Palestinians. Throughout its occupation of Palestinian territories, Israel has committed all kinds of atrocities against Palestinians, including massacres and non-stop human rights abuses, such as land confiscation, home demolitions, arbitrary arrests, and excessive use of force against Palestinian civilians. The Palestinian resistance to the Israeli occupation has taken various forms. It started from peaceful protests to civil disobedience. But with major world powers' unconditional support for Israel, under whose influence even Arab countries started normalizing ties with the regime, Palestinians found no alternative to armed resistance to achieve their rights. Palestinians decided to take up arms and fight for the liberation of their territory, with groups such as Hamas and Islamic Jihad gaining prominence in the popular struggle.
What do you think? Do you advise me to continue as a slave? It's a right which has been granted for us who are living under occupation. That the time the diplomacy and politics fail, it's a right of those people who are living under occupation to defend themselves with all means. The victory has to be snatched, especially when you are facing such extremist, murderous, criminal leadership of your enemy.
On October 7, 2023, the Palestinian resistance fighters launched their biggest operation yet, a massive and deadly response to over 70 years of Israeli atrocities against them. Thousands of rockets fired from Gaza rained down on the occupied territories. The projectiles reached as far north as Tel Aviv and as far east as Al Quds. Shortly after, Palestinian fighters stormed towns in the south, launching deadly attacks and taking more than 200 captives, including military personnel. The 10-hour Al-Aqsa flood operation dealt a humiliating blow to Israel's much-touted military and intelligence system. Shortly after the operation, the Israeli military launched a massive strike on the besieged Gaza Strip that has killed more than 30,000 people, most of them women and children, so far. The Israeli regime, encouraged by the U.S. and Western allies' support, outlined three major objectives for this onslaught on Gaza.
I have three goals. One goal is to defeat Hamas, utterly defeat and destroy Hamas. The second is to bring back our hostages. And the third is to ensure that we don't have a similar threat in the future from Gaza, and that what happens in Gaza is good for Israel, good for Palestinians, good for the Middle East. And to do that, we need to demilitarize Gaza and de-radicalize Gaza. We cannot have, it'll mean for the foreseeable future, Israeli overriding military responsibility.
The Israeli regime has not only failed to achieve the goals, but also was forced to negotiate with Hamas on a ceasefire. The failure to achieve these goals has not only exposed the limitations of Israel's military prowess, but has also highlighted the resilience and the determination of Palestinian resistance forces.
There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively. This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but here's the question. Was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly. It was expected that there would be a reaction, but it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you. For example, in the West Bank in 2022, before the operations, the number of martyrs was about 500. The number of wounded people who were taken to hospitals exceeded 3,000. We are talking about thousands of prisoners. Under this occupation for 75 years, You have two choices. Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression. But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to their right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for the occupation.
Operation Al-Aqsa Flood marked a significant turning point for the Palestinian people, showcasing the harsh reality of Israeli occupation to the world. This operation not only highlighted the plight of Palestinians, but also indicated the power of Palestinian resistance in a coastal territory which has been under siege for some 17 years. Prior to this operation, Arab states were moving towards normalizing ties with Israel, overshadowing the Palestinian cause. However, the Gaza war that ensued the October 7th operation has shifted global attention back to the long-standing struggle of Palestinians for freedom over the past seven decades. It's been a stark reminder of the brutality of the Israeli occupation. Despite Israel's military might and reputation, the war in Gaza has been perceived as a humiliating defeat for Israel on multiple fronts. Public opinion worldwide has increasingly turned against Israel as images of civilian casualties and destruction in Gaza have circulated widely, shedding light on the brutality by Israeli forces which left no safe zone in Gaza, hitting even hospitals and UN refugee shelters. The October 7th operation stands as a testament to the power of Palestinian resistance, showcasing how a small and determined movement can withstand the might of the Israeli army, backed by the US and other Western countries. This operation highlighted the unwavering resilience of the Palestinian people and emphasized that resistance is not only a means of survival, but also a powerful tool in securing their right to self-determination. The ability of Palestinian fighters to hold their ground against one of the most advanced armies in the world has not only defied expectations, but also exposed the limitations of military might in the face of steadfast resistance. The refusal to surrender in the face of overwhelming odds sends a powerful message that the Palestinian people will not be silenced or oppressed, but will continue to fight for their rights and their dignity.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The latest killing of the internationals in Gaza was done to serve the same goal, ensuring that no aid distribution mechanism is allowed. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "The Zionist regime described its clearly deliberate killing of 7 humanitarian aid workers on April 1st as a grave mistake, a tragic event that happens in war.